Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now, on Last Call, back on track. Stocks striking yet another new record, and now one hedge fund titan sounding off on where they could go next. Countdown for TikTok. But could a looming ban by Congress become censorship? Coming up short, Tesla, another self-driving technology getting a shock safety rebuke. Organized retail crime running wild. We take an exclusive inside look at the shadowy world that is stealing billions. And a special Tuesday edition of Make It with Can't Miss Advice for creating the ultimate side hustle, whatever your background. All that and more over the hour. So as always, belly up, buckle up. Last Call is up right now. Well, good evening here. Good afternoon out west. I'm Brian Sullivan. Thanks for joining us. All that ahead. But we are starting tonight on a very serious topic, and that is air safety and Boeing's growing woes. Those concerns have some airlines pulling back on their plans for this year, which means if that goes on, is there a risk of a shortage of planes ahead to meet all your growing travel demands? Let's bring in now Phil LeBeau for more on exactly what is going on here with not only Boeing, but its customers.
And we'll talk about the customers in just a bit, Brian, because there was the J.P. Morgan conference today where we heard from a number of CEOs, CFOs, new guidance, a couple of airlines saying we're not going to have as many planes as we thought because Boeing won't be able to deliver. But we'll talk about that in a bit. I want to start first off with really the reason Boeing shares were under pressure today. And it has to do with the fallout from reporting that started last night with the New York Times. We were able to independently confirm that the Boeing safety audit done by the FAA found 89 production areas that were checked. Of those, 33 recorded failures where they were not following the protocol that they should have been following. 97 instances of non-compliance. Let's keep in mind that Boeing right now, when you look at the production system for the 737 MAX, they are under investigation by the DOJ, the FAA, the NTSB. They're also conducting their own internal audit. The head of Boeing Commercial Airplanes putting out an email to employees today saying, look, we're going to do our own independent audit to further emphasize the safety processes that we are supposed to be following. They're also putting together production changes where they believe they are necessary, all part of trying to double down and make sure that they are doing everything they should be doing when it comes to building airplanes. Keep in mind, their production of airplanes is now capped at 38 per month. That's by order from the FAA. They can't go above that. If they want to go above that, that'll be up to the FAA. Why is that significant? This year, a number of airlines had airplane orders for the MAX where they were originally expecting far higher deliveries. That's not happening, obviously. So today, Southwest said, we're going to trim our expectation. We're going to take only 46 MAXs. We originally thought we were going to get 79. You can't take what's not being built. And none of the planes being delivered this year will be the shorter MAX 7 aircraft. That aircraft has yet to be certified. Whether or not they get deliveries of those next year remains to be seen. As you take a look at Southwest, keep in mind the company is also saying today that it is reassessing its full year financial guidance. We'll likely get new guidance when the company reports its Q1 results at the end of April. Alaska also today, Brian, said that its future plans in terms of capacity in flux because if it's an all Boeing fleet and 737 MAXs, deliveries are not going to be what they thought they were going to be. United came out and said, we don't want the MAX 10, which has not even been certified yet. Instead, focus on delivering the MAX 9. A lot of airlines having to make some new plans right now because of everything that's happening with the MAX.
Clarify a little bit, and I know you're not talking to the stock directly, Phil, but you've talked to people who are talking about it. Southwest Airlines lost 15% of its value today, one of its worst days ever. Is that only because they're worried about future plane deliveries?
Well, they took, and remember, they've changed their guidance. They haven't pulled it, but they basically said, we're reassessing, and we'll let you know what we expect for the full year based on capacity plans, et cetera, and they'll give that guidance in April. If you were a Southwest investor, you probably are looking at this going 15% on something we knew was going to happen. Look, there's nobody around who follows the airline industry who did not think that Southwest was going to have to adjust their capacity expectations. They just can't take delivery if the planes are not being built. And so this has been known for a while, Brian. And that's why I looked at the reaction today and I talked with an analyst and they were, you know, a little bit surprised at the reaction of the stock. But we also are in a market, Brian, yeah, where it doesn't take much for people to say, I'm getting away from this.
Yeah, 15% on a reassessment just seems odd. Maybe we'll learn more tomorrow, if at all. Phil, the New York Times reporting that the day before that Alaska Airlines flight where the door plug blew off, engineers and techs flagged the plane for maintenance, but the airline chose to keep the plane in service to do three more flights. I got to imagine those suing Alaska Airlines might have some fodder here from that article.
Well, we reached out to Alaska Airlines. In that article, they also talked with the head of safety for Alaska, and he says, look, based on all the information that I had at that time, I would make the same decision. They had a couple of instances where warning lights had gone on, and the way they looked at the situation, based on the information they had, they felt that it was still safe to fly to make those three flights. Clearly, there was the incident on the last flight of the day. And by the way, as I said, Brian, we reached out to Alaska Airlines, and it says that it stands by the decisions that were made leading up to that incident and the way that they handled everything before the incident and then after the incident. Obviously, you know there's a lawsuit going on. If this gets to court, clearly there's going to be an interesting day when they bring up the decision process at Alaska.
A lot of news. Just a weird day for Southwest. Phil, thank you very much. All right, let's talk more about all this and more with American Airlines pilot and Allied Pilots Association spokesman, Captain Dennis Tager, and Citigroup Research Senior Aerospace and Defense Analyst Jason Gursky. Jason and Captain Tager, thank you very much, Captain, for being on set. I know you were at the J.P. Morgan conference today. I'll get to you in a moment. Jason, any insight into Southwest Airlines? A 15% drop for a reassessment just seemed, I mean, I'm sorry, it raised an eyebrow.
Yeah, look, I'm not an airline analyst. I'm the aerospace and defense analyst. But to your point, it seems a little aggressive to me if it's just based solely on the fact that they needed to, tell the market that they're not going to have as much capacity available to them this year as they had expected at the beginning of the year. To your point, I think, and to Phil's point, that's probably the worst kept secret on the street right now.
Captain Tager, you were at the J.P. Morgan conference today listening in, and people, I would imagine that Southwest Airlines was a major topic of conversation. And if it was, what are people saying or guessing?
Well, it was another J.P. Morgan headline-gaining conference. Jamie Baker and Mark Streeter did a great job right there in the room as Southwest spoke to it. And we heard of the implications of the MAX delivery. You know, there's a commercial interest in this, and Boeing failing to deliver the airplanes is affecting capacity plans. It's thus affecting network plans. So across the board, United, you know, as Phil adeptly addressed, United, basically Scott Kirby said, you know what, stop building a 10, give me the 9. Every airline is fighting to ensure that their network plan is not undermined by this failing of Boeing. And it changes every day. You know, we just heard the news that you covered about Alaska. And I know the pressurization control unit. I know there's three levels of it. But we watch this closely and do a fact check on it as well. And I know that the FAA is looking at Boeing and their, you know, boots on the ground. They need to do that with the airlines and the maintenance shops.
Well, you do work for a competitor to United Airlines, and we talked about it the other night. But yesterday, we had a LATAM, a Chilean-based airline, suffered some kind of major mechanical problem because they took the black box, so it seems like that's not weather, and they used some weird language about it. That was a 787. And we talked about it a little bit the last time you were on. How much more thinking are you doing when you get in the cockpit of a Boeing plane today versus a year ago?
More than I ever have. And I was in the military, and Boeing airplanes saved my tail many times in combat. the enemy was outside the airplane. Now it feels like the enemy is within. They're going to get this right. They've got no other choice. But as we learn more, it gives me even more pause when I get on the airplane. And not pause of concern of flying it, but of making sure that I'm watching that like a hawk, because I don't know what's going to pop up next. We just had a proposed AED about flight control issues and a wire bundling. It's like, you've got more? What else are we going to... An airworthiness directive by the FAA. It basically says flight controls on top of the wing spoilers can just flash up on one side and not the other, and they said it can cause the aircraft to be uncontrolled.
You got that on what?
We got that as a proposed AED from the FAA.
A proposed AED?
Proposed AED, because they have a fix. They want all the airlines to check the wire bundling where this weakness is to ensure that, this weakness that they've discovered is not rampant throughout the fleet.
Yeah. I
looked at the checklist for that malfunction. It's 7 pages long, and it's pretty ominous. It's something there if a system goes bad when it shouldn't, but when it's installed improperly and it has that exposure, that's an error we've got to stop delivering to my cockpit.
Jason, Citigroup and I think 5 other firms had Boeing as one of their top picks, various sector picks, heading in to the new year. I don't know if it's still on one of your top picks list or not. You can confirm that it is. But Boeing is a lot more than just a commercial airline company. It's a major defense contractor as well. This company was loved by Wall Street, not just Citigroup, coming into the year. At some point, does Wall Street sort of ride to the rescue of this stock?
Oh, I don't think until the news flow is behind us, right? Look, I still have a buy rating on the stock, so I can confirm that. I'm still constructive on the long-term outlook for this industry, right? I mean, Boeing and Airbus, its competitor, have backlogs that stretch out well into the 2030s. People want to fly, and airlines want that capacity. So there is plenty of good stuff out there ahead of us once Boeing figures out how to execute according to plan. And they do, you know, have some medium-term targets out there that if they're able to hit will be attractive returns for investors from here. I think, you know, over the next few months, we've got to get through this 90-day window. The FAA asked Boeing a couple of weeks ago to go off and study for 90 days and come back with a plan on how they're going to right the ship here. And so, you know, look, the stock is going to get attractive at some point here. But, you know, we've got to get past this.
Do they need to right the ship? And I'll say that because I want to make this clear for Boeing. OK, that they're basically in a lawsuit with Spirit AeroSystems, or there's a lawsuit against Spirit AeroSystems. There's people who are blaming their supplier for the door plug. The other problems were with United. We don't have any idea why the tire fell off or why the plane spun off the runway in Houston. Is it possible that even with the FAA report, that this could also come down to an airline issue, United or otherwise, as much as a Boeing issue?
Well, look, I think the issues that are going on the manufacturing floor are Boeing's issue, right? Whether it comes through them by way of a supplier. At the end of the day, they're the ones that have to sign off on the paperwork certifying the compliance of that aircraft when it leaves its factory floor. So new aircraft, I mean, this is all on Boeing. And I think this is what investors are keenly watching. Now, look, there are, incidents in the pilot there, Dennis, that's there with you today can speak more to this, but there are issues that go on at airlines from time to time, right? So I see that you're showing here on the screen now a tire that falls off. That was a 20-year-old aircraft. I think that would point to a maintenance issue and not a Boeing issue. But, I mean, certainly Boeing has got to figure out how to cleanly deliver new aircraft.
And if I could say, and he's right, and that's why we called on the FAA to do the same thing with airlines. But the reality of this is shareholders for Boeing put their money in the hands of Boeing. At the jet bridge, people put their lives in my hands. And so all the cycles of stock price and a whole nine yards, none of that's going to work if you don't deliver a safe and reliable aircraft. It's airflow over the wing and money flow. They both have to happen. One can't outweigh the other. But I guarantee if commercial interests override the safety margin, you're going to be in big trouble. And we're going to defend that margin with our last breath.
Well, I think the fear for Boeing investors, and I'm flying Friday on United across the United States, not even thinking twice about it. The fear is that maybe Scott Kirby at United or anybody else, Ed Bastian at Delta, picks up the phone and orders more Airbuses. Is it a better airplane?
Airbus makes a fine aircraft.
Except for the 380. It's too big. Captain Dennis Tasier, Jason Gursky, thank you both very much. Do appreciate that. All right, on deck. The record run for stocks is back on, and wait till you hear what hedge fund titan Ken Griffin had to say.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
All right, welcome back. It was a great day for your money. The Dow jumped more than 200 points. The S&P notched its 17th record close of the year. NASDAQ also popped as big tech names got their groove back. Take a look at NVIDIA, Microsoft, and Meta. You might have heard of them. They all made money for investors today. But the big winner in the S&P 500 was Oracle. Oracle having its best day in more than 2 years after the blowout quarter we told you about last night. Company reporting a big spike in what else? AI demand. Earlier today, Citadel CEO Ken Griffin said this.
This is a moment in time where you can, in some sense, you can sign up for big, bold, these companies are changing the future, or you can put your money to work in areas of the market where price earnings ratios are much, much more in line with historical averages and have a very different risk reward profile.
Griffin also sharing his thoughts on NVIDIA.
This is like the gold mining in California. Those that sold the picks made a lot of money. And it's very clear that NVIDIA right now sells one of the most important ingredients in the AI story. And they've done an incredible job of capitalizing on it.
So will NVIDIA and the AI boom keep lifting all stocks to record highs? Let's talk about it with Sand Hill Global Advisor, CIO and CNBC contributor Brenda Vangiello. Brenda, I don't have... Has anybody ever asked you about AI before and how those certain group of stocks may power the market? Because I feel like I've asked you and others the same question every day for like a year.
Certainly is a theme that everybody is excited about, not only in the public market, but in the private market as well, as we certainly see here in the Silicon Valley. But I would say, certainly it's phenomenal that we have this great, seemingly open-ended growth area of the economy that we really didn't appreciate a year ago. And here we are, and certainly a lot of excitement about it. So a company like NVIDIA, absolutely a significant beneficiary. Yeah. The stock is up a lot, but the earnings are up three times better than what was initially anticipated for fiscal 24. So there's a rationale there. You could say it's justified. It's up 300%.
Sure.
Yep. And so are the
not pro or con NVIDIA. It's not my job. But I will remind people that NVIDIA, while an amazing company, makes stuff, right? At the end of the day, they're a manufacturer. Now, they manufacture pretty advanced, incredible stuff, but they have to make stuff and then sell stuff. We saw Southwest Airlines drop 15% on reassessment of possible earnings and order flow. And I'm thinking, if Southwest could drop 15% on a, quote, reassessment, what would happen if NVIDIA came out and said, hey, orders have slowed just a couple of percent?
Or I think the risk with NVIDIA is, let's say they come out and actually just meet earnings expectations.
Oh, God forbid. I think
some risk there, too, that obviously expectations are very high and they have blown them away so far, but that cannot persist indefinitely. So certainly a huge beneficiary of AI, but I would say in this environment, I think it is important to stay disciplined, take a step back, and understand just how much sentiment has changed over the course of the last year, and maybe take a few chips off the table. And that's certainly what we've done for some of our clients more recently with regard to the equity market.
Lisa, you never lose money taking profit or something like that. Listen, it's a sage. If something does occur, we'll re-rack this and rerun this days, months, weeks, years into the future and say, listen, nothing goes up forever at this rate. Brenda Vangelo, thank you very much. All right, coming up, TikTok, you do stop. A potential ban on TikTok looming. But even if you support that, could any deal actually turn that into a form of broader censorship? The discussion ahead.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
All right, let's get to tomorrow's news tonight. And the House is set to vote on a bill at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. It's a big one that could ban TikTok. It comes as TikTok CEO plans to meet with lawmakers this week to lobby against the ban. Big surprise there. CNBC Washington correspondent Emily Wilkins is here now with more. Emily, the question is, will this bill pass the House or the Senate? Would it be signed?
Well, Brian, the expectation is that it will definitely pass the House tomorrow. Remember, this is the bill that passed unanimously, 50-0 out of committee just the other week. And this could set up a situation that would force TikTok to either divest from Chinese parent company ByteDance or, as you said, be blocked in the U.S. Now, the House passage is seen as highly likely, so all attention right now is turning to the Senate, where the fate of the bill is less certain. Senators told me today that they also have national security concerns about the app, but they have a couple concerns. Among those, freedom of speech, whether the bill singles out and punishes TikTok unconstitutionally, and the ramifications of getting rid of a popular app among 170 million American users. Now, TikTok users who have turned their accounts into businesses arrived on the Hill today to lobby lawmakers against the bill. Several dozen of them held a press conference with progressive lawmakers like Maxwell Frost, who said the roughly six-month window that TikTok would have to find a new owner under the bill would not be enough time.
It's unreasonable to believe that in 180 days that a buyer will be found. And that the deal can move forward, which would result in TikTok being banned. Whether it's banned for a year or 2 years or 6 months, a ban is a ban.
Now, over in the Philippines, Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo recently told CNBC's Eunice Yoon that there is a real danger if ByteDance continues to be able to collect information on American users.
TikTok presents serious national security risks to the people of the United States, data privacy risks, significant national security risks. Right now, there are a few bipartisan bills in Congress that would either ban TikTok or allow us to much more significantly regulate TikTok, and I think that's really important.
Meanwhile, TikTok CEO Shou-Si Chew is expected to be in D.C. this week, although right now it's not clear who he's meeting with. I asked a couple senators today if he was going to meet with them, and a few of them told me they will not be meeting with any company with ties to the Chinese Communist Party. Brian?
Emily Wilkins in D.C., thank you. All right, folks, so even if that bill does pass, and even if you support what you know of it, question is, could it set off a broader wave of censorship? Elon Musk seems to think so. He said today, quote, this law is not just about TikTok. It is about censorship and government control. If it were just about TikTok, it would only cite foreign control as the issue. But it does not. End quote. Let's talk more about that and all the issues around it. Joining us now is Jim Anderson, the CEO of Beacon, an AI development company, and Forbes tech reporter Emily Baker White. Her reporting, remember, found that TikTok actually spied on her and other Forbes journalists. So welcome to you both. Jim, you disagree with Elon Musk's perspective that this could set off a broader wave of censorship. Why?
I do disagree. It's not censorship. It's national security. Everything people say is TikTok is owned by ByteDance. ByteDance is a Chinese company. If you're a Chinese company, you have no choice but to adhere to the wishes of the Chinese government. It is a threat. 180 million Americans have the ability to have what they're seeing and consuming on TikTok influenced subtly or otherwise by a Chinese-owned company.
Emily, I think the broader fear that, and I can't speak for Elon Musk, but what I think he was getting at was that there are other provisions in the law other than just saying, well, it's controlled by the Chinese government, and therefore we can't have it. The bill could be like half a page long, but instead there's other stuff. And you could make the argument without being a tinfoil hattist, I suppose, that if the government can do this, even to a Chinese company, what could they do to other tech companies down the line?
So, I mean, in the United States, we don't have a great firewall. We haven't banned apps before on the basis of national security. So if this bill does move forward and become law, it'll be breaking ground. And TikTok and ByteDance will challenge it in the court systems. And we'll have to see where that comes out. Now, there are a lot of people who say there's a First Amendment issue here. There are 170 million American users on TikTok, according to TikTok. And those people would say, many of them, that banning TikTok would restrict their First Amendment rights. Bill proponents would tell you that this isn't a First Amendment problem because it's a content-neutral restriction. They're not restricting on the basis of what you're saying. They're restricting on the basis of the platform, which is different. But even if they're doing that, it's reasonable to ask, is this the narrowest possible way to solve your national security problem? And that's why the Biden administration has spent years trying to negotiate with TikTok to try to come to a less drastic solution.
And that's
and they haven't found one.
No, and that's, and sorry to cut you off, Emily, Jim, that's what's so weird. TikTok is owned by ByteDance, which is based in China. TikTok does not exist in China. ByteDance does not have its own product in its own nation. The fact that they won't just willingly move the servers to the United States or Canada, where they can be sort of better monitored and controlled, to me, is not only just weird, but it seems suspect.
It certainly does seem suspect.
Keep your company. Just move the servers offshore.
But I would argue it's not just the servers. It's the algorithms. It's the software. It's the artificial intelligence. You're just talking about NVIDIA. We're talking about $1-3 trillion companies growing on the backs of AI. What does AI require other than chips? Training data.
Yeah.
What's one of the best sources of training data? TikTok. So they're sitting on a gold mine. I can understand why they don't want to divest. I can understand why the Chinese government would like to have that and the ability to influence 180 million U.S. citizens.
Jim, you nailed it. Because, listen, a lot of people, Emily, you know, especially if you have teenagers, okay, like I do, and you'll say, well, all this privacy stuff. People, honestly, I don't think they care about privacy anymore. This is not about privacy, though. This is not about the fact that somebody, you know, it's like, well, they're tracking my movements. I don't care. The idea, and I want to show something, guys. Let's throw this up. Last week, TikTok pushed, just automatically sent messages to, I think, millions of its users, basically knowing where they lived. Here's the number of, in your region, Emily, here's the number of your congressperson. Here's their number. Give them a call or whatever. The irony of this, and this is probably the greatest internal PR disaster in a long time, is that TikTok, while trying to prevent this from happening, sort of just proved Congress's point, did they not?
Yeah, so this was a strategic error, I think.
You're very kind.
To back up something that you just said, they actually have moved the servers, but it doesn't matter where data is stored. It matters who has access to it. And they tried to fix that too. They tried to negotiate with the US government to say, okay, only these certain employees will have access and they'll be based in the United States. But at the end of the day, the Biden administration and Congress seems to share their view, thought that as long as ByteDance is owning this company, and to your point, is owning the algorithm, there doesn't seem to be a way to mitigate these national security concerns to the satisfaction of either party in Washington right now.
Well, okay, servers aside, the data is getting back. You got my broader point. The data is also getting back to China and probably to Beijing, Emily. So why doesn't ByteDance, which is run by a Singapore native, just move somewhere else? Just leave China and take the whole company. Here we go, right? And now we live in Austin.
ByteDance can't do that because ByteDance has an enormous number and number of users and number of products in China. And you said they don't, TikTok doesn't exist in China, but a TikTok corollary does. It's called Douyin, and it's very, very popular in China. ByteDance doesn't want to get up and leave China because ByteDance has many apps and they have many millions of users in China.
Yeah, so you've talked about Elon Musk and his complaints here. What did Elon Musk do when he bought Twitter, now X? He put his thumb on the scale. He said, my posts are not getting enough reach. I own the company. I want more reach. He put his thumb or his whole hand on the scale. The Chinese government can do that, too, subtly or otherwise, because what you see
well,
on TikTok...
Well, he would probably argue that maybe the thumb was on the other scale before he bought it, and certain information wasn't making its way.
Certainly, but his posts definitely got the thumb on the scale because he owns the company, which is great. Well, the Chinese government doesn't directly own the company, but certainly could influence. They can do the same thing in ways that you and I couldn't detect, because what you see and what I see are very different.
Yeah, and by the way, we got to go, Jim and Emily, but if you want to not sleep at night, I dare everybody to read TikTok's terms of service. Basically, we have control of your phone and your computer. Good luck. All right, guys, thank you. Really appreciate it. All right, straight ahead. Drivers, listen up. Tesla's autopilot and other self-driving systems getting a big reality check. Welcome back. The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety has a new rating system for driver assist technology in new cars. And they tested out 14 systems and different models from different companies. And listen to this. Of the 14 cars and systems they tested, only one earned a rating of acceptable. That is the system on the Lexus LS. In the meantime, the Ford Mustang Mach-E, the Tesla Model 3, and models from Volvo, Genesis, Mercedes all earned poor ratings. Now, the safety organization reminding drivers again that these partial automation systems are not fully self-driving. You've got to pay attention, people. Do not be falling asleep or watching a movie on your phone. But still, only one out of 14 to be acceptable? Let's talk about it now with the former CEO of Ford, Mark Fields. I guess just more proof that these and their driver assist, like Blue Cruise on Ford or some of the other ones, they're there to help you out. They are not there to drive your car for you, correct?
Yeah, that's correct, Brian. But I think it's something to clarify here. I mean, at the end of the day, IIHS is not testing whether the ADAS technology itself worked as designed, you know, the blind spot detection, the emergency braking, all that kind of stuff. But whether the driver monitoring system, the attention reminders, the emergency procedures were effective. And so it's a really important delineation here. It's not that the technology is not working. It's the fact that, you know, when they were evaluated, whether the safety features activated under these circumstances, and if they issued an alert to the driver. So but nonetheless, you have to take IIHS has been around a long time. Customers notice them, so you have to take notice.
But should we also take it with a grain of salt then?
Well, I do think listen, these things are all packaged together, right? If you're not paying attention, and again, these are what they call level two types of technology, where the driver absolutely needs to be aware and needs to be alert and needs to be able to take control of the wheel when necessary. And so this is part of the package, but the technology itself that you're being monitored for, like the automatic emergency braking and keeping you centered in the lane, that's not being evaluated here. It's the warning system. So they're both important.
Mark, very quickly, there's a lot of stuff going around Twitter, you know, now called X, about the future of Jaguar. I reached out to some car dealers today, got a little intel on Range Rover because they have a lot of co-Jaguar dealerships there, about possibly is Jaguar buying back its cars? Do they have a future? Does Jaguar have a future?
Well, listen, in the scheme of things, you know, it's a very small volume automaker. I would suspect in the last 25 years, Jaguar probably has not made money. But since Jaguar was integrated with Land Rover, and, you know, lots of people like, you know, the big SUVs from Land Rover, they're kind of that business has done well. But I think the Jaguar side has not. And to put it into perspective, Brian, you know, last year they sold globally about 64,000 vehicles. Now, again, to put that into perspective, that's about like 1 month sale of Ford F-Series. And so the car business is all about scale. They have a lot of technology, Jaguar, in their products, a lot of engineering, a lot of costs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they've said they're going to go all electric. They're going to kind of go up in price. So, you know, it's not far-fetched that you would see a different constituted Jaguar in the future.
I know. I'm just getting old, Mark. You know, listen, I miss my Saab where they had the key that was sort of in the middle, which all the breadcrumbs would fall into it. You eventually couldn't turn the key. I still miss it. Hope Jaguar makes it. Mark Fields, appreciate it. Thank you very much. And by the way, if you got what I just talked about, you drove a Saab. All right, coming up, inside the shadowy world of organized retail crime, Courtney Reagan going for an in-depth investigative piece. You got to hear, and you will, but only if you stick around. Welcome back to Last Call. Organized crime rings that target the country's retailers are prompting a nationwide aggressive crackdown by law enforcement. And in a CNBC exclusive, we go inside the criminal police investigations that target the theft rings who are setting up thriving businesses to steal goods and then sell them online. Here's Courtney Reagan with Selling Stolen.
It's a chilly, clear morning in the picturesque foothills of San Diego County as we head to a suspected crime scene. A convoy of law enforcement vehicles is about to descend on an unlikely place, a mansion complete with its own vineyard and chapel rented out as a wedding venue and Airbnb. Police believe it's also the headquarters for a lucrative theft ring where items stolen from Ulta Beauty Supply and other retailers are being resold on Amazon. As we pull up, authorities tell us they have the suspected ringleader in handcuffs.
What are we looking for?
There they are, right there. Okay, okay.
And it's happening everywhere. For months, we got exclusive access to the California Highway Patrol, watching up close how it fights organized retail crime, which, including external theft, totaled $40.5 billion in the U.S., according to the National Retail Federation's most recent estimate. On another day, in another California city, we see more truckloads of what police say is stolen clothing, mostly from TJ Maxx.
We have a search warrant for the resident. Come on, with your hands up now.
I think people feel like it's hopeless. I want the retailers and the victims of this to know that that's not true.
Hands on your head.
Retailers specifically pointing to theft as a growing problem in recent years include Target, Foot Locker, Walgreens, and Ulta. But few quantify the impact or offer many details, raising questions in the industry about whether retailers are using the attention around theft to cover their own operational missteps. At the mansion, the woman in custody is Michelle Mack. According to the search warrant, she's in charge, giving a group of a dozen women across the country a list of retail stores to target, along with the retail merchandise. Those Ulta Beauty products then ending up on an Amazon digital storefront called the Online Makeup Store at deep discounts. The search warrant alleges Mac has sold nearly $8 million worth of merchandise on the platform since 2012. The next morning, a team from Ulta unloads the haul along with CHP officers, sorting and carefully organizing everything. Most of it, $387,000 in stolen items from Ulta, according to authorities, but also some items from Sephora, Victoria's Secret, Bath & Body Works, Sunglass Hut, and Lens Crafters. And these boxes of manila envelopes? They were being mailed to customers who ordered from the online makeup store who now aren't getting anything. Like Donna Washburn, who says she bought her daughter a $42 makeup item for Christmas.
Did it ever occur to you that buying a product off of Amazon, you could be buying a product that was stolen?
No, never. You put in the trust in a store like that, that they're checking these things.
As for Michelle Mack, California Attorney General Rob Bonta announced she and her husband Kenneth are facing charges of conspiracy, grand theft, and receipt of stolen property. The Macks have pled not guilty.
This Amazon marketplace site called the Online Makeup Store that was selling the stolen goods year after year.
We asked Lisa Labruno, Senior Executive Vice President of the Retail Industry Leaders Association, how this could happen.
So if you're Amazon, should you have had some kind of an algorithm that flagged it?
This is not just about Amazon. There's other online marketplaces who serve as fences for the sale of stolen product. But I don't see the online marketplaces raising their hand and saying, we acknowledge that this is dirty money.
Retail CEOs have been largely mum about organized retail crime, but Ulta Beauty CEO Dave Kimball spoke to us in an exclusive interview about the issue.
We're absolutely fed up with it. I mean, it's impacting the experience that we work so hard to deliver for our team. These situations, they're not fun. They're threatening, they're intimidating, they can be traumatic.
What do you think in this case, as we're speaking of in California, that Amazon could have done to know that these were stolen goods?
What I would say more broadly is there is technology available. There's use of advanced analytics and data capabilities to try to understand behaviors that are indicative of reselling stolen goods.
Are you shocked by the sheer volume that one ring could have been doing over more than a decade?
Unfortunately, I'm not that shocked because we've seen it in other parts of the country. And the magnitude of this one is significant. I do believe that the marketplaces and online distribution of stolen goods is part of the problem. This is not some individual that bought too many lipsticks and they want to resell it.
Amazon declined an on-camera interview, but told us it was, quote, untrue that the company is profiting from the sale of stolen goods. A spokesperson said, we invest more than $1 billion annually and employ thousands of people to fight fraud. The company added that it uses sophisticated detection and prevention solutions, allowing us to quickly spot a range of organized retail crime schemes. Amazon acknowledged, in this case, we did not receive signals to identify the seller was engaged in selling stolen goods. As far as TJ Maxx, the company tells us it's laser-focused on fighting retail crime in its stores. There is so much more to this story on CNBC.com and CNBC's YouTube channel. This was just a piece of it, Brian. The full piece is 17 minutes. We went on a number of stings. This is some of the goods that I collected from San Jose.
Collected?
This was just...
What does that mean, collected?
Tags littered in the street. I mean, I stepped on one of these security tags.
Let's be clear, though. My wife works in this world. Consumer products, not theft.
Okay.
I want to be clear. And without picking on any online marketplace, if you sell eBay or Amazon or anybody something for 10 bucks, and you're supposed to sell it for 15, right? And it's on your marketplace for 7, and it's new, it's not used. There's no reason that should even be allowed to be sold because it's below cost. You asked, I think her name was Linda.
Lisa.
Should be,
yeah.
Lisa, automatic.
Right. It is. And that is a lot of the criticism that, you know, these companies are very sophisticated in the tools that they have for scanning, for price dynamics. I mean, you name it. And so why wasn't this detected? This went on in this case for over a decade.
Yeah.
And again, as the Ulta CEO said, this is not someone that's just selling too many lipsticks. They bought 3 instead of 1.
Yeah.
This was,
I'd be different,
a multitude of products, $8 million over a decade at deep discounts.
Important story. More to it. We'll check it out online on the YouTube channel. Courtney Reagan, good to see you. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, coming up, turning side hustle dreams into side hustle reality, a special Tuesday edition of Make It is next.
As someone who is a change maker, it means someone who's pushing the boundaries of innovation, changing the way things work and having a new vision for how business should be done around the world. You know, I feel like I operate with grace, humility, with execution, with grit, and I'm not sure that's something that can be defined by gender. I think as a female leader, more than anything, is that I want people to look at me and say leadership can look different than maybe they expected.
Maybe Tuesday, but we got a bonus Make It Monday for you. Side hustles are on the rise. More than half of Gen Z have an additional way of earning cash. 50%, that's half, I'm told, of millennials have one. And so do 40% of those lazy Gen Xers, like me. So if you aren't quite satisfied with your 9-to-5 and you're looking to make a little extra cash for the comfort of your couch, Smarter by CNBC's Make It team has a new course out today to help get you started. It's called How to Earn Passive Income Online, with guidance from experts, a workbook, and real-life case studies. You can register with the QR code on your screen, and there's an early bird half-off discount. Megan Sauer, CNBC Make It Success reporter and native Michigander, which means I like her already, okay, is the host of that course and joins us now. We're getting a lot of Michigan play on this show. I love it. All right, so first thing, how do you get started?
How to Get Started. Well, Brian, thank you so much for having me tonight. How to get started with your side hustle is actually fairly simple. It kind of just starts by identifying something you're really good at. One of our instructors in the course puts it best. It's like, what would your friends tell you you were best at? And then you kind of research ways and figure out how to monetize it.
Okay, so various, but it depends on what you do.
Yep.
I get it. Some of the people you've talked to,
yeah.
How much money are they making?
You know, it's a broad range, and it really depends on how much time and how much money you can invest in getting these operations, these side hustles off the ground, right? So people are earning enough to kind of pay off simple household bills, pay off their mortgages, and some people are earning up to six figures in income.
And then how do you market yourself? There's a lot of competition.
Yeah.
For this kind of stuff.
Well, and a lot of side hustles are becoming a little bit oversaturated, but there are a couple ways you can set yourself apart. You can kind of like join social media to really gauge your audience and see what people react to. I was in South by Southwest moderating a panel last weekend, and one of the panelists said she even goes so far to figuring out what TV shows her audiences are watching so she can figure out how to connect, how to relate to them. And it also comes down to really knowing the platform you're on and what kind of brings people on board.
Quickly, what would be the most common side hustle out there these days?
You know, there's a broad range because I think a lot of the people I'm talking to that have really quirky ones are just trying to find ways to monetize.
Like, what's the most quirky? Give us something quirky.
Oh, well, the quirky ones, you know, I talked to, you know, a 17-year-old who was figuring out how to sell hamster cages.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was a good one.
A really good job.
It is a really good job. And there are some people who, you know, there was a barista we spoke to who was figuring out how to get people to listen to her talk about her job on TikTok. And those.
You didn't get my hamster wheel joke, but it's that's Gen X for you. Megan Sauer, good stuff. Good to have you on. First time.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Folks, we'll see you tomorrow. Shark Tank is next.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.